The Anton Savage Show
with Kearies.ie
on News Talk.
And it is the Anton Savage Show in conjunction with Street Feast. We're here live in Greystones in County Wicklow. I'm joined by Andrea Hayes, author and broadcaster, and Carl O'Brien, education editor of the Irish Times. A lot in the papers today relating to RTE 2FM. 2FM had an exodus over the past number of weeks. We saw Jennifer Zamparelli go, the two Johnnies have gone, Darren Garrahy has gone. Essentially, the spine of the schedule has left. The interesting thing in all of this, Andrea, is that Dan Healy, who is the man responsible for running 2FM, is saying, total coincidence, unconnected to anything.
I know, it's quite shocking. He seems to be a little bit out of touch with what's happening. If it was any other business and there was such a high turnover of staff, you'd be having questions about management. You'd be looking at, are people happy? You might have a kind of a real discernment and inner reflection on what's going on with me or whoever the management team are. But he's looking at it. I mean, it says it's a great opportunity for younger talent. You know, I mean, he has a lot of young talent already there. He has probably the hottest talent, some of the hottest talent in the nation. I think it's a bit worrying that he seems a bit out of touch.
Well, you do have to find the silver lining to the cloud, one assumes. But it's an interesting characterization that when your entire schedule leaves, you see it as, well, at least there's a gap.
I know. You see, the thing that I would be worried about, because on one hand, we're looking at maybe, and the same news, that we're looking to get license fees paid. And then all of the young people are leaving, perhaps to go to other media like podcasts or different places. So together, I think RTE need to have a real kind of look at themselves and say, what's going on here? Are we completely out of touch?
Now, there is an interesting thing in this, Carl, because that phraseology of the young people leaving to go to podcasts, in actual fact, with the exception of Jennifer Zamparelli, Darren Garrahy and the two Johnnies already had hugely successful podcasts and social media profile and were bought to access the markets that they brought with them. So it seems they're returning to what they already were rather than 2FM having built them up.
Yeah, like it was interesting to hear Dan Healy insisting that this exodus had nothing to do with the crackdown on outside earnings or sponsorship deals and all of that. You know, it must have an impact. You know, it's happening very, very quickly. You've the top talent leaving. And I think the reality is, you know, that's the modern world in which broadcasters work. You know, you're getting a stream of different incomes. There are stricter rules now in earnings in RTE that is going to impact. It is as evident as it has ever been that this is a kind of an existential threat in many respects to the hiring top talent for places like RTE.
And but was it a particular strategic risk to hire talent from a cohort of the most successful podcasters in the country? Because it's one thing to say, look, we built up a presenter and they gradually got a social media profile. Mm. It's another thing to say, this person came with an audience that is larger than we can provide to them. Mm. That you're in constant competition with your own presenter.
You are absolutely. And you know, that is the reality of the way media is going. It's much more fragmented, as we know. Audiences are moving to podcasts and social media platforms. You can get bigger audiences there. I don't think you can blame 2FM for going after people because of that, because they are trying to get the best of both worlds. And of course, he'll do it. The risk is that people will leave, you know, and they'll leave when earnings are capped, when limits are put on sponsorship deals and all other sources of outside earnings. So it can't be a surprise. And it's going to inform, I'm sure, what they do in the future, because if you're going to invest in talent and they're going to walk after 2 or 3 years, if the question is that worth it from the station's point of view?
What about that investment of talent? Because if Dan Healy turns out to be inaccurate and there is a connection between everybody leaving at exactly the same time, what do they do about attracting new staff in under the arrangements where they're going to have to declare their incomes and where they're going to have to ask permission for external income?
See, I'm wondering, should they go back to old-fashioned jocks? You know, like just a proper, I mean, I'm not saying proper, okay, I have to phrase this correctly. You know, is it a suggestion that people want to hear music, they want to hear little links, nice tight links, and they don't really want to know all about the personalities of the people behind the mic? That's just a question. Because they've gone with people who perhaps have a media profile and they're more personality driven. And maybe people go to find out about those people on podcasts or they know what they're getting. But on radio, do we just want to hear the music and spin the tunes? it's a question that maybe he might discern in there and see, have we gone with the right decision to go for these particular people?
Is there a bigger existential question as to what to do with 2FM? Because 2FM was always struggling in terms of its profitability. In the big scheme of RTE, which makes so much of its revenues from TV, it was hard to say, well, there is a good reason for 2FM. If it is now, if it's limped along on half its audience since Jerry Ryan left, and now it's facing this, do you just pull the shutters down?
You could. Maybe you could move Gold over. You know, maybe Gold is something that's online that maybe there's a bigger appetite for that there. I think personally, it's sad to see what's happened with 2FM because it's so much promise and opportunity there. But I wouldn't like to be in Dan Healy's position this morning or this week, in fact, because it's worrying times ahead.
Yeah, they have the chance that they can't really abandon the young audience, though, can they, Carl?
They can't. But, you know, it was striking what Dan Healy was saying in that interview yesterday with Claire Byrne, where he was saying that he was delighted that that 2FM was on the front pages. That sounded very, very desperate. You know, you're on the front pages for the wrong reasons. But, and I think the issue is,
By the way, sorry to cut in you, but one of the things that if you look at the history of 2FM, we sort of forget there was a time it made the front pages for things like breaking stories. Lavinia Kerwick and Jerry Ryan was one of the seminal interviews done anywhere, and it was done on youth programming on 2FM.
For sure. And I think when you make the argument for public service broadcasting and you're asking taxpayers to pay money for this, you know, 2FM increasingly is the weak point in the argument for that, because you can make the case that there is really quality public service broadcasting happening elsewhere. 2FM is very much a commercial station. It's driven just about getting younger audiences and boosting advertising revenue and playing music, and that's fine. But is it public service broadcasting? And that's, I think there is a real existential threat to the broadcaster. Healy insists that is not the case, but I think you'd have to be living in cloud cuckoo land not to see that.
Well, on the topic of Dan Healy, and Dan Healy, of course, being the chief executive of, or MD or whatever they call it, Norty of 2FM, in terms of his insistences, he insisted last week that there was no issue with Jennifer Zamparelli as well. Did you recall this? He was asked if she was planning to go, and he said, I won't quote him exactly because it's a swear word, but he said that it was bull. He thrice said it was bull, and then next week she's gone.
Yeah, it was. If anyone heard it, it was an extraordinary interview, you know, because I think you normally expect, you know, media executives to be very polished, you know, and keep their calm. The interview yesterday was really unusual, you know, was very, very, he was very exercised, to put it politely, and he sounded, you know, desperate at times. And also, when he's making claims which really don't stand up to too much scrutiny for right-thinking people, you do wonder, you know, what kind of position is the station in? What kind of pressure are executives under? And what is its future more broadly?
People may be listening and thinking, well, hang on a minute. News Talk and Barrow Media of necessity has a dog in the fight, because if there is an audience available, Barrow Media across its various different stations will be seeking to get it. It is not for that reason that we are talking about this. It is the splash story on the front of the Irish Daily Mail. It's the splash across the front of the Irish Independent as well. And both of those papers, Andrea, are also reporting an interesting sequelae of the RTE funding issue, which is David McRedmond, the chief executive of On Post, writing to the communications minister to say the licence fee problem may end up with On Post having to make staff redundant.
Yeah, this was really interesting to me, and probably because David McRedmond, obviously he was the head of Virgin Media TV3 at one stage, and his name was being bandied about when Kevin Bankhurst was in the kind of, you know, going for that top job. And some thought that he would have been perfect for that job because he turned around TV3, turned around On Post. But it gave me a bit of a laugh to read this morning that he actually wrote to chief executive, Dave McRedmond, wrote to the media minister, Catherine Martin, and is now saying that On Post is losing money. And I think they could be down 2 million this year. And he is asking, you know, for help in the future. I just thought this was so interesting because I'm sure there's maybe a smile there with him because maybe he thought, you know, he could have gone in and turned it around.
And it's worth just explaining, as I hadn't realised this, On Post gets a commission from every TV licence that they collect. So you pay your 160 quid and I think a tenner then goes to On Post. So now that people have stopped paying, they no longer get that commission.
And he's losing money. And David McRedmond doesn't like to lose money. And this is something that he's been very quick about to kind of report that he's losing money. And it said here that he's asked the government for more than 500,000 to cover its losses in collecting the TV licence. He's also you know, putting it out there that the people who are trying to collect the license are getting a lot of anger at the doors. You know, so he's kind of suggesting that people are very, very unhappy with RTE.
That thing of the impact on Post, he goes on, Carl O'Brien, to say in that piece that if the diminution in revenues continues to the extent that it is currently continuing, he may have to look at a redundancy program for staff. Now, the government at this point is weighing up what to do about the license fee. The last thing they need is to discover, on top of everything else we have to balance, we're going to have to fire a load of on-post workers if we do this from General Exchequer.
I know. This is the headache for the government, because you're bailing out RTE, you're bailing out on-post, and you're also, as the Mail reports today, you're seeing an erosion of support for the licence fee anyway. So their poll, it's an Amoroc poll, it's 53% of the public want to scrap the TV licence fee, 19% say we shouldn't, 40% say they don't know. Now, that's a falling level of support for paying the licence fee, and the biggest resistance to paying the licence fee is among younger people. So, and of course, this is the demographic which is fleeing, you know, 2FM, and that the public service broadcasters are really struggling to connect with. And it does raise a bigger issue of, well, how are we going to fund public service broadcasting? You know, and is this licence fee sustainable? I don't think it is. And I think the government sees that. And I think it will have to be...
You're saying that no fee is sustainable? Media charge, anything like that, no, that needs to be General Exchequer payment, or the licence fee?
I think asking individuals to pay it. You know, I think when I pay my TV licence fee, you know, I feel like one of those mugs back at the Water Charges time, where I felt like, am I the only person actually paying this? Even though I really support the aim of public service broadcasting, I think it's really, really important. And I think it is going to need to come from via the revenue commissioners and collected more generally.
But that, according to David McRedman, CEO of On-Post, that will literally mean layoffs in On-Post.
Well, that's a question for On-Post. They'll have to look at, you know, reorganising.
It has become a question for the government.
But I think ultimately, though, I don't think the licence fee is sustainable. There's falling levels of support for it. And I kind of see that they can't keep bailing out, whether it's RTE or On-Post, with ever-increasing amounts of money. It's a kind of a circular argument, which is kind of not being solved in any corner. You know?
Can I ask, Andrea, just briefly on this to finish up, that thing of the majority of the people who do not want to pay the licence fee being young people, in part, obviously, that has to come from the poison that has been poured into the ears over the last year of scandals emanating from RTE. But the other is there a cause for the argument to be made more clearly and vociferously as to what public service broadcasting is and what value it provides? Because we all use the phrase, but I suspect if you went up to people on the street and said, other than news, Lance, what is it? People would struggle.
Well, it's live, you know, it's live sport events is huge, and that's what we kind of go to RTE for. I think what's very interesting, I don't think it's just young people. It was very telling when they had to pull the adverts for the your TV license, because Kevin Bankhurst actually said that he didn't think it was appropriate. And I think there's a general feeling of a lack of trust, a lack of transparency. The other thing I just mentioned, I got a giggle out of this as well, if I can, but Jennifer has left, okay?
Jennifer Zamparelli.
Yes, she's left, and Dancing with the Stars is a programme that everybody loves. And then Larry Bass mentioned another little dig in the newspaper there, that he doesn't even know if Dancing with the Stars is coming back, because they haven't commissioned it yet, because they don't know if they have the funds. Now, I'm looking at the autumn schedule, where now, you know yourself, it's now coming into the summer. This should have been done February, March. I mean, that's a real problem. So that's going to be a knock-on effect on the type of programming that we'll be able to see in the autumn.
A lot of text coming in, 53106 at a cost of 30 cent, or 087-1400-106 on WhatsApp. Public broadcasting is worth funding and worth preserving, but the question is, in its current guise, is RTE? Is 2FM not important to generate talent for RTE television and should be looked at more broadly for RTE to stay relevant for different age groups? Anton, management generally, and not just media, seem to think its front lines are just pawns to be shoved here and there willy-nilly. Maybe it's time for management in training. Carl, can I get you to, many, many, many years ago, you wore a political correspondent hat. Throw it back on and tell me how unusual it is for an MEP to have a go at their party leader in public while campaigning for election. Because this is what we have with Niall Blaney and Micheál Martin.
Yeah, this was extraordinary, Anton, really, yesterday. So Niall Blaney, he's one of the three Fianna Fáil candidates in the sprawling constituency of Midlands Northwest. Now, the selection, it didn't begin well anyway, because there was this very fraught selection campaign where Blaney missed out very narrowly for the nomination. And there's a bit of bad blood then from that, but he was ultimately added to the ticket, and as was Cynthia Ni Mhuircheu as well. And we've had a lot of bad blood that's been running there for a while, and you could even trace the bad blood back to the 1970s with the Blaney family dynasty, because as we know, there's all this tension between independent Fianna Fáil and Donegal and Fianna Fáil, so that's the kind of backdrop to it. So earlier this week then, Niall Blaney put out a press release, and he spoke about the fact that he was being effectively ignored by the party machinery, and he wasn't getting enough airtime in media.
A press release,
yeah, and not issued by party HQ, not surprisingly. So this was the kind of mood music running into this event on Friday, where they launched, if you like, the official European election campaign. So then, of course, the various Micheál Martin and the various candidates were asked about the campaign ahead, and then it descended into really a kind of a free-for-all where Niall Blaney was complaining in public at the event about the fact that he wasn't getting enough support from Micheál Martin, that he hadn't even campaigned with him properly. Micheál Martin interrupts him and said, well, actually, I was on the campaign with you. And then Blaney says, well, actually, you were only one of three people who was there with me.
And I think said, and I was only in it because I showed up, you were out there anyway.
Exactly. You know. And so I think Micheál Martin desperately tried to say, let's talk about this after the actual.
But I'm right in saying this is very odd. I mean, it's one thing to wash your dirty laundry in public. It's another to fling it at your party leader.
Absolutely. And from Blaney, point of view, you know, he feels, this is that he hasn't been getting the coverage, he's not on the front pages of the newspapers. Well, he is today. It's actually worked for him, and he's all over the place, and he's definitely getting a bit of attention. So as I said, mission accomplished. For
well, this is like the equivalent of Dan Healy talking about how nice it is that people are talking about 2FM. He has very much got himself into the middle of the media agenda.
Very much so, yeah.
While we're talking about politicians and political matters and political spats, though he is apolitical, he once was a politician, our current president Michael D. Higgins, Andrea, on the front of, I think it is The Examiner has this, and they're labelling it an exclusive. The president is coming out to defend us against the Israeli ambassador's suggestions that we are anti-Semitic as a nation.
Yes, President Higgins said, I think the Israel ambassador has been deliberately suggesting that all people of Jewish belief are now at risk and are being threatened, and there is no evidence for this, President Higgins said. And he said, there are many people of Jewish faith who are as shocked as I am by the people, the mob, the attack a food convoy and take its flour and rice and scatter it on the ground, he said. There was another comment there, and I can't find it there that I'm trying to...
This comes off the back, of course, of the ambassador being recalled for discussions about the situation in Ireland, and the ambassador making clear that there was a sense that anti-Semitism was on the rise. I think she said that on the Pat Kenny show during the week. Again, is it unusual for the president to weigh in on something like this, Carl?
Historically, it would have been, but not for our current president. As we know, he's very keen on wading into a political debate when it suits him. And you know, you can argue about is that the right thing to do, because the office of the president is supposed to be apolitical. But you know, he can't help it really a lot of the time. And to be fair, you know, he will tend to wade in on issues where they are moral issues as he sees them. And for the most part, you'll tend to wade in an issue where there is big public support behind them, and that's certainly the case here. We can see that there's huge public support behind the government's position, and I think that when the public as well is seeing the response of, let's say, the Israeli foreign minister putting out that Instagram video or Twitter video put to the backdrop of Irish music and Irish dancing as Hamas went around massacring Israeli people on October 7th, that is not playing well. I think putting the ambassador in a public show where they're being forced to watch footage from October 7th alongside the other two ambassadors from Norway and Spain, that doesn't play well either. And it has been a bad week for Israel, because not only have you had the recognition of the Palestinian state from three countries, we've had the International Court of Justice finding as well, and increasingly they're losing friends internationally, finding themselves more and more isolated, and that does lead to those kind of I think desperate PR tactics which do not play well with anyone outside of Israel.
Although one assumes that as long as they have their biggest friend in the form of the US, they are probably all right.
Very much so. And in fact, that was maybe the one surprise about the Irish government's stance on this, because so much of our foreign policy is often mediated through how is this going to play in the US. And this was one of those cases where, you know, the US wouldn't necessarily support where we are. It's not going to oppose what we're doing, but it was a calculated risk, and it was at last a sign that, you know, Ireland is taking an independent line in foreign policy, and I think that's to be welcomed, I think, for most people.
A text to say, it is 2FM's fault for taking people from their Instagram account to do radio. Bring back real DJs like we had on Radio Nova back in the 80s.
Oh, I would agree.
Andrea and Carl, thank you both very much. That's Andrea Hayes, author and broadcaster, and Carl O'Brien, education editor at the Irish Times.
The Anton Savage Show
with Kiri's.ie
on News Talk.